Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live, the Monday edition. A lot to talk about on today's program. A look at some of the weekend's big headlines. The Olympics are over now. We're going to do a medal count. Which college won the most medals? American journalism collapsing before our eyes. Probably not a surprise, but a really good report about that. We'll talk about that. And also, what do people consider relationship breakers? Scientists looked into it. We've got a list for you. Those things are coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon here on this Monday. And we're back from the weekend. And Grant, you weren't late, but you were right on the cusp of getting your time. So you got that good jog up our stairs. You're ready to go.
I'm really ready to go. I had to take my wife to the DMV to get her driver's permit because she's from South Africa, so they act like she's never driven before anywhere else. She has to start all over like she's a 15-year-old.
Well, it's a challenge when you have driven in another country and then you got to drive in the U.S. In a lot of cases, because you have to drive on a different side of the road, and the signs are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I went to Ireland, I didn't even attempt it. That's a dangerous place to drive.
Exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't attempt it either. It seems like there's too many mishaps. I hear so many stories from people who go overseas and drive on the other side of the road, but forget and start driving on the right side of the road again.
Yeah, if you're going to rent a car in Ireland, you have to you really have to pay for some serious insurance. It's pretty expensive because the roads are so narrow. And that's one of the main reasons, I think. And I do remember actually one person that I was talking to that was over there also visiting. And they had rented a vehicle. And they told me, yeah, I went out this morning and the side view mirror is missing.
Oh, what?
It was just gone. So whether they it was because of them or somebody else, I don't know. But so it is interesting. And actually, I took a cab in Ireland because we took a lot of cabs. And I was talking to the cab driver, who was very friendly, and I said, yeah, did you get in a lot of accidents? He's like, oh, yeah, all the time. I said, oh, it must be the foreigners. He's like, no, it's the locals. So got to be careful where you're driving.
Oh, wow.
Well, I hope she gets her license and it all works out.
Yeah, she I don't know. She seems like she'd be kind of a risky driver, so she probably does need to start things over.
Start from scratch. It's harder to learn when you get older.
Right.
Yeah. It's like trying to ride a bike when you're my age, if you haven't done it before. not a great idea.
No.
Lots to talk about today, as we mentioned there in the introduction, some of the headlines from this weekend. And the Olympics, of course, have just ended, and they have a pretty interesting write-up about just the medal count. The U.S. won the most medals by a pretty large majority, or a large margin, rather. And but they had an interesting list here of the colleges that got medals. A lot of the Olympic athletes are college students, which you've got to be like the coolest kid in school. You know, what did you do this summer? Oh, you probably saw me at the Olympics winning gold.
It's amazing. Yeah, those people are younger than me even. I'm 23, but those people are even younger.
Yeah.
Just strutting around campus.
It's I guess it would be pretty interesting to see what that life is like. I bet they're just so busy with training that they probably aren't even seen, you know, by the general populace of the school a lot of times.
Probably isolated, don't have too many friends because of how hard they train. Yeah.
Gotta be focused. The school, I guess we'll go in reverse order here, tied for 15th with 4 medals from the Olympics, Washington and Arkansas, those colleges there. They got 4 medals apiece. Number 13 was Tennessee. They got 5 medals. Tied for 10th, there's 3 of them, West Virginia, Oregon, and UConn. They both got 6 medals apiece, so pretty good. Tied for 8th, Penn State and Indiana, both 8 medals apiece for those schools. UCLA comes in at number 7. They've got 9 medals. And number 6 is Georgia, 10 medals. Tied for 4th, there are 2 here, Texas and Florida, both with 13 medals, which is pretty good. Southern California got they're tied for 2nd with California, 21 apiece, so pretty amazing. California has Missy Franklin, who, of course, is a swimmer that won quite a few medals. She didn't do as well this Olympics, but she still has won, obviously, several. And then number 1 was Stanford, 27 medals. They have Katie Ledecky, who quite to know now as a great swimmer, 5 medals. So way to go, Stanford. 27 in total, 5 for Katie.
5 for one person. Yeah, that's where Andrew Luck is from, the Indianapolis Colts quarterback. So that's what stands out to me.
Yeah, they pretty amazing how these schools did. OU, sadly, OSU, we didn't have any. You know, maybe next time. Herbert W. Armstrong College, where we're broadcasting from, we did not have any.
We're getting there.
We didn't have
any.
We're
in training.
Didn't have any yet. Funny story about Katie Ledecky, my daughter, who is 4. She really likes to watch the swimming, and she was really captivated by this young lady's name, I think, in particular. And so we were running a bath for her, and she has a rubber duck, you know, rubber ducky in there. And she said, "Look, it's Katie Ledecky."
That's some sharp wit.
She
must have gotten it from you.
I don't know where she got it from, but it surprised me. I was like, well, that's legitimately very funny.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of times kids make jokes, and you're like, yeah, okay, you know, but sometimes they catch you off guard, so... Anyway, that's how I will always remember her, not as the 5 medal-winning Olympian, but as the funny name for the rubber duck.
Poor Katie Ledecky.
It's a great name, I guess, for a swimmer. It's like Usain Bolt for running. Like, yeah. My kids couldn't believe that was his real name. They're like, that's a nickname, right? I'm like, no, that's his name. He's fast. He's a Bolt.
I wonder if anyone's looked into that, see if you got an official name change.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the perfect name. So
it is.
So good for him. Of course, he had a good Olympics there as well. So anyway, that was kind of interesting, and that's done. Now we've got, I guess, 2 years till the Winter Olympics rolls around. Thankfully, nothing too bad happened. There was a lot of terrorism fears. Nothing happened too severe. Of course, there was some crime. There were some accusations of crime that didn't actually happen, which has been in the news a lot, but thankfully nothing too serious.
Were those swimmers cleared of those charges against them?
Well, I've seen that they apologized, and then I think it's, well, they may not swim again. I mean, that's kind of what's up in the air as far as I know at this time, that they might be kicked off of swimming.
Okay.
So...
I didn't really want to read that much about it because it didn't seem too significant compared to a lot of other things that are happening.
Well, that was kind of my take on it, too. It was a bad deal. Of course, we're talking about some of the U.S. swimmers there that lied about being held up, and in fact, they were actually up to trouble. But the thing that struck me about it was how much media attention it was getting in comparison to other things that are a lot more serious. So I mean, it was bad. It makes the U.S. look bad, but... You know, they were kind of acting like it was the crime of the century.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, there's a few other things going on that are a little more serious right now. So that I'm sure will still be in the news. Couple other headlines to talk about today. Of course, the border down there in Mexico, the southern border with the U.S., it's always been kind of an ongoing issue, especially lately. This write-up says Southern Command warns Sunni extremists infiltrating from the south. Islamists freely cross U.S. border with help of South American alien smugglers. So this is a big thing in this campaign. You know, people like to pile on Donald Trump and say he's racist and so forth. But still, there is a real issue down there with that border, and it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I believe Donald Trump released his first campaign advertisement a couple days ago, and the whole emphasis was on security and how the Obama administration right now is so open to migrants and they leave the border open, and it's just exposing America to danger. His ad was actually pretty inspiring because it talked about how, you know, this candidate's going to deal with issues. He's a law and order candidate.
Yeah,
he's going to protect the citizens. But that's something that we've heard a lot about, is terrorists coming in through that border where there's hardly any enforcement anymore.
Right. This is a quote here from Army Colonel Lisa A. Garcia. She's a Southcom spokeswoman. She said networks that specialize in smuggling individuals from regions of terrorist concern, mainly from the Afghanistan-Pakistan region, the Middle East, and East Africa, are indeed a concern for Southcom and other interagency security partners who support our country's national security. So they're sitting there and they're looking at these people coming through, and they're warning that, look, they're coming through. And that's really the whole issue. Whenever people start talking about immigration, illegal immigration, and that border down there, it's very easy for the word racism to fly around and that type of thing. But just from a security standpoint, well, and the fact that there are laws, if you need to follow laws if you want to come into this country, right? I mean, it's even like your example, your wife's going to get a driver's license
today.
She
can't just drive around without a license.
She's not just going to go driving around.
Exactly.
She's following the law.
Yeah.
So these people aren't following the laws. They're coming across, and you just don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that it's all valedictorians and the next Bill Gates, I mean, get serious. There's going to be some problems.
Yeah, I've heard that there, I believe 80% of all women who come across are raped by other illegals and also by the what they call coyotes who run the women across the border. So, I mean, is that really something that we want imported to the country?
Right.
Actually, also, the Border Patrol, I forget the specific name of the agency, but they've actually officially endorsed Donald Trump, I believe. So that just kind of shows you the people on the ground are supporting Donald Trump's policy there.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, we're not saying he's got the best idea or anything like that. But it's better than nothing, right?
Exactly.
It's better than just let anybody come
and that
through.
That is apparently the alternative right now, is to just let them flood in.
And again, it's something that's not being talked about all that much. I mean, what are the numbers? I don't even know. I'm sure I could look and find them. But, you know, why is that not one of the top headlines? All these people streaming across. Where are they going? What's happening with them? So they're worried about it. And again, this is somebody that's working down there on the border, and they're saying it's not just people from Mexico coming through. It is people that are just using that open door to come in, and in this case, a lot of Sunni extremists. So we'll see how that progresses. Interesting, too, thinking about people coming across the border, thinking about Germany. Last week we talked about how they want to ban the burqa. Well, this is a big story from over the weekend, the boy that blew up that wedding. And dramatic photos Monday showed police in Iraq arresting a boy and uncovering an explosive belt around his waist as a child reportedly claimed terrorists kidnapped him and forced him to blow himself up. The arrest took place 2 days after investigators said a bomber between 12 and 14 years of age detonated explosives at a wedding party in southeastern Turkey. And that was the big story there, killing at least 51 people on behalf of the Islamic State terror group. So now there's this video today of this other boy being caught, and they caught him, and they took the belt off. But look, you know, there was that guy that he blew himself up, killed 51 at least. I think it was 22 children at a wedding. You think about the highs and the lows, right? The excitement of a wedding and then the terror that follows. But the bomber was between 12 and 14. And then they catch this other boy who says, look, I'm being forced to do it by, you know, terror groups. And so you think about those things, and then you think about people coming across the U.S. border or what Germany's trying to do. And you just, at what point do you take a stand? Because you don't know who could blow themselves up. Well, it's just a child. Yeah, it's just a child with an explosive belt around his waist. Or it's just a woman with potentially an explosive belt. You just don't know.
There's an extreme lack of logic in a lot of the politicians' minds. That's right. They just emphasize, oh, they're just poor, helpless children. Yeah, but so many of them could have been indoctrinated or forced to carry out an act themselves. Think about just how strict it is with the airlines. If an unsavory character tried to fly here, he'd have to pass through multiple customs. He'd have to have a passport. He'd have to have, you know, a background check to even be able to get here. But he could just go down to Mexico and cross the border without any sort of surveillance. So which option do you think they're going to choose, and who is going to come over? A lot of them, they're smart enough to realize the easier path to America.
Yeah, it's not a good situation, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. There's a report from Germany that we'll talk about where they're urging the people to stock up for an attack. At least somebody's thinking a little bit clearly about this, you know, and so it's just very interesting to see what is happening over there. I mean, people in general, do want to see a free society. I mean, we all like the freedom of being able to move about and do things. However, then at what point do, you know, other ideologies, freedoms start to attack the freedoms of the country they're in?
Yeah.
There's a question there. You know, it's one thing to say, well, this is the way I want to dress. It's what I believe. That is fine, I suppose. But it's being taken advantage of with terrorist activities.
Yeah, and so much is said about compassion for these helpless people who cross the border. That's great and all, but the main responsibility of national leaders is to protect the people who are legally there. You can't just have people come over who you have no idea about. You don't know anything about them, why they're even coming here. And we just act like there are no possible threats, and anyone who says otherwise is a racist.
Yeah, it's interesting to really just look at the United States and look at Germany, and it's two nations going in opposite directions, even in relation to the terror threat, because there's calls now for the Germans to arm themselves to protect themselves from terrorists, while over here, after a terrorist attack, everyone says, get rid of your guns. Right? You know, isn't that what's said? And so it's just interesting to see the two different ways of dealing with the problem. Just very different mindsets. And just as far as a logic standpoint, you'd have to give it to Germany for being smarter about this.
At least you could say that Germany was in the same position as America until recently. They've been hit by so many attacks that they're having to finally face reality. And you can see America is going to have to do the same thing or just collapse from within, because you can't just let all these people come in, and you can't solve it by getting rid of weapons. If that is the only way to protect yourself, so many of these gigantic terrorist attacks that have happened here, like in Orlando, could have been stopped if one person had a gun and took care of it from the start.
Anyway, it's a tough situation. Not a lot of easy answers to those dilemmas that come up with terrorism. Yeah, it's interesting how people's lives, some people, you know, they die very early in a freak explosion or accident. Some people live for a long time. There's a woman that's 119 years old. She's aiming for the world's oldest title. Once you get to be that old, that's about all you got to shoot for, I think.
Yeah.
A woman who turned 119 on Sunday and has made it through two world wars, said she hopes to survive long enough to be named the world's oldest person. Her name is Fu Su Qing, and she has lived long enough to see her family grow five generations. You think about what kind of a, you know, you got your grandma and your great-grandma, and now this is like, what, the great-great-great-great? That's a lot of greats in there. She has about a year to go before being granted the title of the oldest person, I guess. So it's a competition there at the end, who's going to make it, who's not. And when people grab that title, they usually don't have it very long.
Right.
It's always somebody else coming for the throne.
The motivation's gone once you get the title.
I got it. It's over with. She was born August 21st, 1897. This is pretty amazing. And has spent her entire life in southwestern China. And in addition to the two world wars, she has witnessed the Chinese Civil War and the Cultural Revolution. So it's amazing that she has survived, you know, two world wars and some uprisings there in China. Just to stay alive that long, it's got to be, you just got to be pretty fortunate, I guess.
Yeah, you have to keep yourself out of some trouble as well, because millions of people have been killed in China over the last century, and she was able to avoid all of that as well. That's just incredible to live that long. Imagine living every second of the entire century.
Yeah, that's amazing. Can you imagine being 19 years old and being told, like, well, you got another 100 years left?
Why?
Yeah. Well, at that age, you'd probably think, like, oh, this is great.
But, yeah.
But, yeah, you start thinking about even, like, her turning 100, you know, 100. You got another 19 years left. That's a long time.
I guess it would be motivating after a while, once you've gotten that old and you've accomplished so many other goals, at least if you could try to become the longest living person. That would make you probably be more careful about your health and your choices.
Yeah. I imagine it's almost like death just forgot. Like, it made the rounds and it was like somehow they just forgot. Yeah. It just keeps on living.
She's like, what about me?
Nah, we forgot about that one. So 119 years old, pretty amazing. Seems like a lot of those older people do come from China and some of those areas. So I don't know if there's something to that. Rice? Maybe that's the key.
Probably a better diet, I would guess, than here especially.
Probably a better diet, probably more moving about. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, well, if you look at the time period she lived, I mean, obviously early on they wouldn't have had the transportation we have today, so she was probably pretty active, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I should rephrase that. Chinese people probably, they do eat pretty much every living thing. But, I mean, yes. Eating a lot of rice instead of more fatty things would be a benefit.
Yeah, probably doesn't have the processed amount of food. I wonder if she's on the internet, like if she enjoys that, or if she's like, that's way past her day. You think about all the stuff she
still reads from ancient scrolls.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I hope she's written a book or something, or somebody has, just about her experiences, because that's just that's a unique viewpoint that not many people would have. You know, man, you just think about that 1897. That seems like ancient history, but she was alive back then. So pretty amazing. Again, her name is Fu Suqing. I think that's how it's pronounced. She's 119 years old. She wants to be the world's oldest. So, well, hopefully she makes it. It'd be a shame to make it this far and not make it.
I know. Just trip at the finish line.
Yeah.
Just short.
One day.
Oh, no.
So that's kind of a good story there. And make sure you listen for the Key of David program that's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. You can always hear those programs at 6 a.m. and then also replays throughout the day. One of the programs today is titled, I Will Break the Pride of Your Power, which is, of course, a reference to a specific prophecy, which was given to ancient Israel, but it applies today to the modern Israelite nations. If you don't know who those are, the United States and Britain in Prophecy is a great book to get at thetrumpet.com, talks about that. But basically saying, and of course it is talking a lot about America, that we would have power in this time, but not use it. And that's even talked about a fair bit on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, maybe not specifically in that way, but just the fact of how the United States is in a position to deal with Iran. We're in a position to deal with the terrorist threats. We have the power to do it, and yet we don't do it.
Right. We're withdrawing from a lot of regions, like several nations in the Middle East, and also way over there in the Far East with the Asian nations, letting China pretty much be as belligerent as it wants to. Kowtowing to Iran for whatever reason, even though we're in the position of strength and don't have to give them anything. It seems like we're embracing all of our enemies while withdrawing from all over the world and, you know, downsizing the military as if there are no threats out there.
You're right, as the threats grow more and more. I mean, even the border is a great example of that. We have the power to stop that, mm-hmm. to stop the border crossings. And again, it's not like, you know, sealing it so no one ever in the history of the world comes across, but just check people, you know, like anything.
It's just as basic as following the law. I mean, my wife is from South Africa. I have to pay $5,000 so that she can legally stay here. You know, she could easily probably stay here and be undetected, but you keep the law. I mean, it's just a principle of character. You can't just break the law and do whatever you want and not have any consequences. Although maybe you can now.
Right. But obviously you shouldn't.
Yeah.
So that's I Will Break the Pride of Your Power. That's the Key of David program coming up today on KPCG. Also, make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talked today about a lot that's going on in the news. This report from Germany. Germany encouraged, they are being encouraged to stockpile 10 days of supplies in case of attack. And they're not talking about conventional warfare. They're talking about a terrorist attack. Mm. So it's amazing. I mean, they're bracing for more terror attacks. And that's pretty frightening. It's the first time since the Cold War that they've been instructed to do something like this. And, you know, here in the U.S., as this is brought out in the program, you know, we're told, oh, carry on. Don't worry about it. In Germany, they're saying you need to stockpile 10 days of food, cash, medicine, whatever you need. That's pretty frightening. That's pretty alarming. I mean, imagine if you got something like that in the mail saying, hey, by the way, you know, go ahead and stockpile.
Yeah, at least they're smart enough to have the citizens be preparing for something like that instead of the alternative, which is a police state. It seems like they might be tipping a little bit further toward that as well, just to enhance security, taking away some people's privacy. But here in America, a big reason to get rid of guns is so that the government can vastly overreach and pretty much roam the streets.
Yeah, it's a really interesting report today. And I saw it when I woke up and I was checking the headlines. I was like, wow, that's a big, big deal. And then he was right on it on the Trempa Daily Radio Show. So really great program there. And also talks about Iran because they're the ones that are really pushing this terrorism. They're known as the King of the South. That's how they're labeled in the Bible. And there's a lot that's been written about that at thetrumpet.com. We even have a booklet titled King of the South that you can read. It talks about that. And on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Stephen Fleury talks about how they've been empowered by the U.S. Isn't that ironic? I mean, we're empowering Iran. And as he brings out in the show, the hopes was that making a nuclear deal with Iran would kind of help them be a little more moderate and they'd maybe, you know, help us get the Middle East under control. Nay. That has not occurred.
What's the point of even doing that when Iran was struggling so extremely with their economic issues because of all the sanctions, and now we lift all the sanctions and they're fine and they're just pretty much rebuking America, capturing sailors, breaking the nuclear deal repeatedly. They're not giving anything in return, and there was no reason to even think they would.
Right, and it reminds me historically of right before World War II. I was reading a book recently that mentioned how the German people were just about ready to get rid of Hitler before the war, and the thing that kept him in power was Chamberlain going over to visit him and giving him credibility. And so what a ridiculous thing, but that made me think of what's going on now. Iran was really on the verge of collapse. There were protests, if you remember, back in that Arab Spring, as it was called, that were never given any backing by the U.S. They were shut down, and then now they've been empowered right when they were on the brink of probably having some serious trouble. We totally just gave them the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah, it makes you wonder America's motivation behind who they helped during the Arab Spring. It's like they picked and chose certain nations to support in their uprisings, and Iran, the one nation you would think would be due for an overthrow, they ignored.
Well, yeah, if you look at it, they pretty much supported overthrowing pro-Western leaders.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy, but that's what the history says.
Well, because they were apparently dictators who actually stifled some of the Islamic extremism in their own people.
Yeah.
That is actually a benefit to America, but they said, well, you're a dictator, and we want a democracy here. The people don't even want democracy in those places, and we've seen it based on who has taken control after those dictators were toppled.
Right. The idea that of democracy is, in a lot of those places, is that they will democratically elect the next dictator.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But the whole system's manipulated. So it's not a good deal. And, of course, it's been nothing but disaster since that occurred. But so it was a really, really good program today. This ties in very specifically to very specific prophecies about the King of the North and the King of the South. That are written about there in Daniel and other places. And you can find a lot more about that at thetrumpet.com. And make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening with the press in this country. Pretty interesting. We'll look at that next on Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life, and I invite you to join me for a little night music on our next episode as we explore compositions written to depict elements of this time of day, whether moonlight, stars, dreams, sleep, or lack thereof. In our Sounds of Scripture segment, we will talk about the Bible's acknowledgement of musical inspiration coming at night. And for our classroom corner, we will discuss whether or not the time of day that students practice is of any effect on their success as musicians. So join me for our next episode of Music for Life, Music for Night.
Music for Life airs this Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Just had that advertisement there for Music for Life. Of course, that's a great program hosted by Ryan Malone, and that comes on Mondays at 4 in the afternoon, and then, of course, it's replayed throughout the week a few times. Or you can get the archives at kpcg.fm. And I was kidding with Grant here because his dad is pretty notorious for not being able to sleep. And this one's on night music. So if you can't sleep, I guess either you got to find music that helps you sleep or you've got to use it as an inspirational time to write your great whatever you're going to write.
He would enjoy that program, I'm sure. He does actually get creative with the time he's awake. Get a little exercise in, listen to the jazz channel on his TV, maybe practice the accordion a little bit.
The basics.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, we've all had at least a couple of nights where you don't sleep well, and it's a pain, and it's hard because I always wrestle with, well, do I get up and do something or do I just lay here? Like, what'll be better for me going into tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a weekend and you don't have anything major the next day, then it's not so big of a deal to get up and do something. But you know, when you know you've got to get up at a certain time, you got a whole day in front of you, you just think, well, what do I do? Is it better to lay here or is it better to get up? I can never tell.
Yeah, I just wonder how much lying there and doing nothing while you're wide awake actually does recharge you for the next day. Because if it doesn't, why not just do something else?
They say you're supposed to get between 7.5 and 9 hours a night, but... not always easy to do, except for when you're like a teenager, then you can sleep for about 15 hours a day.
Easily.
Yeah. Easily.
And my brother can do that easily.
He's sleeping right now, as a matter of
probably,
fact.
Probably, right through his classes.
And he has been for days. Before we get to our second main story here, this is kind of interesting. From Fox News, this is Jesse Waters. He does Waters World, which is kind of a funny little segment, but he's got some good reports too, I think. And he has this little write up, a real assessment of Obama's two terms. So he just runs down a list of a few things and says, okay, here's the real assessment, because there's a lot of numbers and a lot of things thrown around, and those numbers can be flipped around and made to look one way, and they really can be manipulated a lot, and I think they are.
Yeah, it's amazing how you would think facts and statistics can't be altered, but the way you present them makes all the difference. And so if you're a dishonest person, you can always slant things in your favor.
So he has a list of a few things here. He says this is the real assessment in his viewpoint anyway of Obama's two terms, and I think the stats show it. Jobs. The labor participation rate is so low. We haven't seen this since the late 70s under Jimmy Carter. Nobody runs for office of president saying, I want to bring back the regime of Jimmy Carter.
Well,
not successfully, anyway.
Well, some of the left does still really admire him. So, you know, what does it take to be a bad president, I guess?
He's still out there building houses, isn't he? Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah.
Paychecks. People are making less money now than they were when President Obama took office. Keep in mind, he took office at the height of that financial problem in the U.S., but the paychecks have gone down. Healthcare premiums have increased by almost $4,000. I saw a pretty good write-up, I think it was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, or one of those papers was talking about Wisconsin specifically, and how much the premiums are going to rise. Do you think they're expensive now? They're going to jump 9% on average, and it could be as high as 30% for some people. People can't afford it, and they say, well, you know, we've got subsidies in there to help with it. Yeah, if you're a certain income bracket, but if you're not, if you're in a different income bracket, and it's not like that cutoff, I forget where it is, 45,000 or something. It's not like, oh, wow, we're living on, you know, Ritz Avenue here. I mean, that money is hurting when you yeah. have to lose that. And that's for the basic coverage, and then you still got a $5,000 deductible? Come on.
Yeah, $5,000 is far more than anyone has in savings today. The average person can't even scrounge up $400. We've talked about that before for an emergency. So how can we expect someone to have $5,000 for a deductible right away?
Yeah, and then why do you have the insurance if you've got to pay $5,000? I mean, I know, I guess, for the people that have like this ongoing serious issue that just takes a ton of money, that there might be some help there. But that's what they're finding out. That's why it's not a sustainable system, because the people that are signing up for it are the ones that require $250,000, $300,000 worth of treatments, and the young, healthy people aren't signing up for it.
Yeah.
So where does the money come from?
Exactly.
Right? It's just not a sustainable system. We should have seen that when we read through it before we passed the bill. Oh, wait.
No one read it
no
because
read
it's
it.
A couple feet high of
That's right.
paperwork.
That's right.
And even those who passed it made sure that it didn't apply to them before they passed it.
You got to pass it to find out what's in it.
What in the world? What does that mean?
That's
no,
crazy.
No one's ever going to know what's in it. No one's going to read that whole thing.
or understand it if you read it.
Yeah.
Probably say like reference appendix A, you know, whatever. government dependency, he says, food stamps have skyrocketed under this presidency, up almost 36%, and home ownership is down. Well, that sounds fantastic. the president has almost doubled the national debt. Nothing to see here. Wall Street has gotten richer, but Main Street has not. It's always funny when people run for office. They always say, "I'm tired of the, you know, the Wall Street. I'm here for you, Middle Street." And it never goes that way.
No, it's amazing too, because if you think about it, who is really a source of so many jobs in this country as it is? It's the rich people who start businesses and employ the middle class and even the poor. So to try to tax them of all their money and to put all these regulations on them that really restrict them, it's just going to make them more likely to fire a lot of their employees.
Right. And that's what's happened even with the healthcare situation. People just, they're not making as much because they can't keep as many employees. He says the southern border is an absolute mess. We highlighted that earlier. Multiple domestic terror attacks on our homeland under the president's watch. Of course, we all remember those. He says Obama has underestimated the threat of ISIS, which has spread throughout the Middle East and into Europe. And the bottom line is that after almost 8 years of President Obama, the American people are less wealthy and less safe. That's according to Jesse Waters. And he's not just, you know, making it up. That's what the numbers say, the real numbers say. They'd like to throw out the unemployment rate. Well, if no one's working and they're not considered in that number, then who cares? You could have everybody stop working today and say zero unemployment rate.
Exactly.
Paradise is here.
That's how you manipulate the statistics. And it is devious. They know what they're doing to try to mislead the American people, to make them think that the economy's never been better. People have never been more happy or more stable in their employment.
Yeah. And it's not the way it is on the you know, what's going on Main Street, as they say. This is an interesting, really interesting write-up. We've been talking about this for a while. I think a lot of people have, because it's pretty apparent, but it's good to see some other outlets really jumping on this. New York Post: American journalism is collapsing before our eyes. They say Donald Trump may or may not fix his campaign, and Hillary Clinton may or may not become the first female president, but something else happening before our eyes is almost as important. I would say it's more important. Mm. The complete collapse of American journalism as we know it.
There's a complete suspension of all objectivity in journalism today. There's such a frenzy to bury Donald Trump and keep him from making it into the Oval Office as the president that people in journalism are just getting rid of all pretense of objectivity. They're completely siding with Hillary Clinton and trying every single day to bury Trump. It says even here, indeed, no foreign enemy, no terror group, no native criminal gang suffers the daily beating that Trump does. The mad mullahs of Iran, who call America the great Satan and vow to wipe Israel off the map, are treated gently by comparison by the media.
That's a really poignant quote there, and it's true. It's very much true even today, just checking out the Washington Post and their email they send out with their stories. The top five, again, were all anti-Trump. And then there was a write-up even a week or two ago where they admitted it. I forget who it was that admitted it, what outlet, but I think it was CNN or somebody. And they said, yeah, I mean, the rules don't apply. We're going after this guy. Yeah. And it's just completely one-sided. And how can you have a democracy if you don't have a free and unbiased press?
Yeah, this article says that the media is torching its remaining credibility by being so slanted toward Clinton. And it's also saying the media will likely never recover credibility after this. They are going so extreme to bury one candidate that everyone is seeing it and they're getting tired of it. He even talked about the New York Times specifically, which I thought was interesting. We were just talking about that on Friday, how that specifically used to be such a high quality medium. And now, even though so many of them were liberal in the past, they at least had an editor who had the common sense to put them down the middle in terms of their ideology. Now they don't get rid of any opinion whenever they're talking about these different issues. So the New York Times has really abandoned its standard. That was the main example they talked about.
Well, right, because anytime you've got a journalist or a staff at a paper or whatever it might be, and there's different journalists there, they're going to be different leanings. Fair enough. But there has to be like a teeter totter. There has to be that balance there, to where, like the example they use, where even though the journalist leaned more to the liberal side, the editor said, "Well, I'm going to lean more to the other side to balance this out. And I'm going to be careful about where I put people, you know, what we print, to try to at least give both sides of the story. At least give both sides and say, well, this person feels this way and this other person feels the other way. It would be great if we got rid of all that and it was just these are the facts, which I think is how it should be. But because I think that's unrealistic, there should be a balancing. But I think the reason it's disappeared is because all the new journalists come out of the educational system where they're all kind of herded in the same direction. And really brainwashed, if you want to call it what it is. And then so are the editors, and so that's where you go.
Yeah, it's said here that the New York Times actually used to have a clear separation between the opinion section and the news section of its newspaper. So it had different editors for the two as well. If it had any opinions at all, it was all relegated to the opinion section. The news section was facts, 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 and that was it. It's not that way anymore. The same editor does both sections of the newspaper, and that's what has changed so much. All the political opinions of these news reporters are actually injected into their articles, and so now pretty much every article is an opinion piece. There's a big difference between reporting the facts and writing an opinion column.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, I think a lot of us have noticed that if you read some of these different sites, where it is opinion, like you say, and a lot of that has to do with them just wanting to get out their ideas instead of report the facts. But it's also lazy journalism.
It is.
Because it takes effort to dig in and find something of value and present it in a way that, shows what's happening. That's the skill of journalism if you're a good journalist.
Yeah.
Anybody can sit down and write a daydream.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I think about so-and-so. Well, great.
Yeah, I actually know that from my own experience as well. If I'm writing a news article, it does take a lot longer. I have to talk to a lot more people. I have to get sheets and sheets of different facts to make sure that it's accurate. And then if I write an article with maybe a moral of the story, it doesn't take all that research. I don't have to talk to all these different people. It does take less effort. I think both types of articles have a benefit. But when you're trying to report the facts and educate the American people without bias, why are you infecting them instead of educating them?
Right. Well, and I think a lot of times, probably, if a journalist sets out to write a piece, if they come at it from sort of a let's let this story write itself, we'll find out what the facts say and present them. I think that's different than coming at it from here's the way I want this to go, and I'm just going to find what works well enough to make my opinion happen. Even the ones that aren't maybe labeled opinion pieces really still are because of that very thing. They have an opinion. They're going to ignore the facts that don't highlight what they think, and they're just going to pull in the other ones. And so they could say, well, I am reporting the facts. Well, maybe some, but not all of it. It's like being a parent and having two kids come to you, but you only hear one side of the story. Well, okay. Well, Billy's always right and Tommy's always wrong. Well, you got to talk to Tommy to figure out. They're probably both wrong.
Yeah, is that ever the case that one child's always right? It never is that way. But that's the problem with how they teach journalism in the universities today. It's all in absolutes. It's all dogmatic, as in this position here is right. And so they're all brainwashed into believing that. That way, whenever they get hired, they all write the same things and they say, well, this is right. So it's not even like it's opinion. It is still opinion, and oftentimes it's a wrong one. Even, it's a wrong opinion where they twist the facts and pretend like it's the truth. This article actually quotes the media reporter of the New York Times, and he gave an excuse for getting rid of objectivity in this election cycle. He said, if you're a working journalist and you believe that Donald J. Trump is a demagogue, playing to the nation's worst racist and nationalistic tendencies, that he cozies up to anti-American dictators, and that he would be dangerous with control of the United States nuclear codes, how are you supposed to cover him? So if you have that kind of idea about either candidate, if that's your thought on either candidate, you shouldn't be covering them at all.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely right. Because that is sort of the... And it becomes like the infamous Ben Rhodes said, it becomes an echo chamber, to where they just are parroting what they've heard. I mean, because even a lot of, I think, the journalists that write their big opinion pieces, I don't really even think that's their original opinion. it's just like being anywhere, being in high school, I guess, if you want to simplify it. And you just say what the popular thing is, popular expression, or the, you know, well, this kid's cool, that one's not. Based upon what? Well, that's just what everybody says.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
And that's all it is.
Yeah. It even talks about how, like you were saying, these opinion pieces actually are just parroting the latest Clinton ad. They're the opinion pieces in the New York Times and the Clinton campaign advertisements sound remarkably similar. So it's like these people who are paid to write opinions are just copying down from a transcript what Hillary Clinton has been saying.
It reminds me of, speaking of bad journalism, reminds me of this experience I had years ago. I was working at a TV station when, something happened. I forget what it was. It was some news event. It was a pretty big deal, and I should remember now, but I don't exactly. I want to say it was something to do with Kosovo or something over there. That was kind of the time period. And we had this one lady that worked there in the news department, and she was one of the main producers for the newscast. And I think she just didn't want to come into work that day for some reason. So she called the boss and said, you know, I'm going to monitor the situation from home, and I'll, you know, send in my report. So she was going to stay at home and watch TV. And just that was how she was going to produce the newscast, off of watching television. And so I always remember that. I thought it was funny. I thought she just didn't want to come to work today. And they told her, why don't you go ahead and come on in? Let's look at the actual sources we're supposed to be using instead of watching CBS or whatever. We were a CBS station, so that was fine. But yeah, it is interesting. I think there is a lot of laziness. There's a lot of just intimidation. If you write something that the people don't agree with, you're not going to be able to write for the Times.
Yeah. You know, even talking about Ben Rhodes, he bragged about how he told all these clueless reporters this absolute fiction about the Iran nuclear deal. And pretty much it sounded like the reporters were only going to the administration for the facts, even though the administration would have a vested interest in deceiving people about the facts of that case. But you have to have multiple sources. You have to get beyond the surface, beyond the you know, the public relations statement that the White House is going to put out.
Right.
And that is just lazy to not go deep into it and to just believe whatever the spokesman tells you.
Well, and there's a lot of intimidation that's come out of this administration. It's been written about a lot, where certain reporters, if they didn't play the game, they were ignored. And so that was intimidation, because how can you be a White House correspondent and not be able to ask your question? You know, you're not going to do your news service any favors. And they knew, and they kept score. So that's the state of journalism that we're in today. It's a really interesting write-up set the New York Post. American journalism is collapsing before our eyes. And again, like it highlights, can you recover it? Once your trust is gone, can you recover it?
No, you definitely can't. This is a historic mistake by the New York Times and other publications and media outlets to just get rid of their objectivity. It's their whole job to report honestly, to just report what the facts are and not to try to slant the American people's view. The whole idea is that the American people should be educated enough by the media to make their own decision. The media figures, well, Trump is so dangerous, we need to prevent them from having any chance of picking him by just bombarding the people with these bad stories about Donald Trump. You can see it's working. He's losing a lot of the opinion polls badly right now. And is it that surprising when it's really come at the same time as this onslaught of negative pieces from the media?
Right, and that's something we're going to learn from this, is how much sway does that media actually have? We'll find out. He has dipped. But for all their efforts, you know, it's not as major as they were hoping it would be. And then, too, I read a story where there were some CNN reporters that showed up at a Donald Trump rally, and people started chanting, "Do your job."
Oh, wow.
People aren't – I mean, as a society, we can be a little thick sometimes maybe, but sometimes we're not that stupid. I mean, you can tell that there's a bias. Now, if a person agrees with it, then they're probably fine, but – I think there's a lot of people out there that say, well, wait a second, this is all one-sided here. And so it'll be interesting to see, because in a way, they're really putting the journalists and the Times and these other places, they're kind of sticking their neck out on the line here, because if they can't sway things like they think, they're kind of obsolete. What's the point of their existence?
Right. It's all for nothing. If they lose their credibility, it's a bad business move, because everyone's going to leave trusting them. They're going to look to other sources. the New York Times used to be the very best. Mr. Gerald Fleury has said that. The radio station's founder has said that. And they're just not now. Donald Trump, like you said, calls them fiction.
Right.
That's really what they are, because they've put away their journalistic standards. They think, well, this is such a crazy time. Normal standards don't apply. Well, the standards always apply. You can't compromise the standards. Your one job is to report. The people will decide based on objective reporting.
Right.
It's not your job to make the decision for them.
Right, and that's what they're saying. We know better than you. So,
and they really don't.
No, they don't. They certainly don't. So anyway, it's really interesting to see how this plays out. You can read the rest of that at the New York Post if you'd like to. One last thing to look at today before we close. If you're thinking about a long-term relationship, there's a few deal breakers that are out there. Scientists ask 5,500 Americans to reveal their, quote, relationship deal breakers. Here's what they learned. There's some things that people just will not stand for. Disheveled or unclean appearance. Probably not a surprise. 63% of men and 71% of women said that's a deal breaker for them.
Good point. Yeah. And I keep thinking I need to shave, but all my razors are dull, and that's my one lame excuse for not shaving my face.
But it's trimmed. You're not.
That's true.
You're not like the Grizzly Adams.
Yeah. I don't have hair up near my eyes because
right.
I didn't shave that part.
The second one is laziness. 60% of men and 72% of women said laziness is a deal breaker.
Hmm.
If you're just sitting around, they don't like that. The third one is too needy. People don't like others that are too needy. 57% of men, 69% of women. Hmm. Don't like people that are too needy. That's kind of interesting. I suppose that would be a different definition for different people, like what too needy is.
But. Yeah. I know my wife likes to be around me a lot, but I enjoy it. I mean, I think, you know, she comes out of nowhere and just sits down a foot away. She just has to be right next to me at all times. But it's a good thing, I think.
So you do want the person to actually sort of want to be around you.
Right.
One would hope. This one is interesting. Lacks a sense of humor. That's a big one. 50% of men, 58% of women do not like somebody that lacks a sense of humor. Well, this one's pretty obvious. Lives more than 3 hours away from me. Well, yeah, that would be an obstacle. They're too needy, but they live 3 hours away, so it works out. Lacks self-confidence. That's a big one. 33% of men and 47% of women. It's bigger for the women. They like a guy that has a little bit of self-confidence to him.
Yeah, you got to definitely avoid insulting yourself all the time, because then the partner will think that you're just helpless. And there's nothing more unsettling for a woman than to just be led in a rudderless ship.
Yeah, that's not something that people like to be around. Another one is... too much TV and video games. 25% of men, but 41% of women. It's a bigger thing for the women, which makes sense, because I think probably more guys are involved in the video games and the television watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think overall, I actually read something. I don't know where they got the facts about this, but they said slightly more women play video games. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, I never even thought of women playing them hardly.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. This weekend, I saw just a lot of people out there, I assume, playing Pokemon Go,
mm-hmm.
because they're all over with their phones. And a lot of people look like they hadn't been out of the house for about 4 years. But apparently Pokemon drove them out of their homes.
Maybe that's a good thing. Yeah. At least they're getting out. They're taking a hike.
They're taking a walk, getting out there and doing something. Another one is stubbornness, 32% and 34%. They don't like too much stubbornness, I guess. This is funny, the next two, because they're the exact polar opposites. Talks too much and too quiet. So,
good point.
Got to be right in the middle. Don't want to talk too much, don't want to be too quiet. That's a deal breaker for some. Although these percentages are lower. Only 11% of men think that being too quiet is a problem. So apparently that's not a big issue with a lot of the ladies.
Yeah, it's funny, because last night my wife and I were listening to KPCG, listening to one of the Trumpet Daily Radio shows replayed, and she was trying to talk to me while there was a really important point going on. I was like, can you just wait a second? I just want to hear this one thing.
1 second. Yeah, it was that way in our house growing up, because Paul Harvey was always on around mealtime, and so we'd sit down, and if he had something to say, it was silence! Listen to Paul Harvey.
It can't be as good as what Paul Harvey's got to say.
No matter how good your story is, Paul Harvey's got...
He's the master.
He's got the rest of the story, so it's better than what you have. Yeah. And then the last two are too athletic and not athletic. Mm. So some people think that if somebody's too athletic, that's going to be a problem. I could see that, I suppose. If you were kind of an average guy and the lady's a triathlete, that might be a little bit of a hindrance or vice versa. And then the not athletic, that's a major one for some people too.
Yeah, I'd say either too intimidating if the person's too athletic, or kind of just dragging you down if not at all, because probably more sickness, things like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, too, the longer you're married and the older you get and the busier life gets, it's good if you both like to kind of go at the same pace, and hopefully that's a pace that's somewhat athletic. You know, you've got to move around, you got to do something, or else it's easy to just get into that slide into middle age and beyond. Yeah, I can make it to 119 if you're just sitting around. You got to get moving.
A sedentary lifestyle just takes a couple of years off your life expectancy, so it really is something that needs to be paid attention to.
Absolutely. Those are some of the things that Americans, and probably, I would imagine that's probably global,
yeah,
that are deal breakers when it comes to the long-term committed relationships. Those are some of the things that are going on in the world today. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's coming your way in just a little bit. Here on KPCG, for myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for joining us today. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.